You're listening to George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason. Welcome back, and thank you for looking past the technical difficulties we had last hour. That was coming out of Donbas, not the station, by the way, and I apologize for that. Eva Bartlett is a very, very brave frontline reporter, and she's going through a lot of persecution from her own home country. We didn't have a chance to get into it last hour, but the CBC, which is the Canadian version of the BBC, is blasting out videos that she is a propagandist and one of those people that should be ignored or, you know, dealt with. Now, this is the National Broadcasting Company. And I want you to think about that in terms of, in light of, we'll say, what happened to Graham Phillips being sanctioned by the UK for doing an interview with a prisoner. Now, Aidan Aslan, the way that story developed was Aidan Aslan, who was with the Ukrainian Marines in Mariupol, requested that Phillips do an interview. So Phillips did. And Aslan had handcuffs on. Well, back at home in the UK, the Parliament representative from Aslan's home district got upset about it. And he circumvented the law and demanded in Parliament that sanctions be applied. So this is like your congressman from your home district sanctioning people you don't like or people that you're talking to because they think they might have hurt your feelings. And these sanctions took away Phillips' bank account, took away a lot of rights that Phillips has as a British citizen. Now, it's not just Phillips at stake here. Honestly, that's the least of the problem. If a representative in any government can do this arbitrarily, regardless of what the laws are protecting your rights as a citizen, I've got news for you. You're not a citizen and you don't have rights, because they can be taken away by someone that's supposed to be protecting your rights, just arbitrarily taken away. Now, in terms of Graham Phillips, honestly, I'm not a fan of his. He's done some great work on in the field on the front lines of Donbas. But, you know, things are what they are. So I'm not, you know, trying to bring understanding for a friend in that case, because we're certainly not. But the fact that this happened to him or to any other journalist or any other person, because you don't have to be a journalist, you know, that's just the tip of the spear, because once they start, they start. And, you know, it's like this whole thing with the IRS in the U.S., Joe Biden saying, well, they're only going to go after the top 1%. Yeah, they need 80,000 new guys to go after the top 1%. There aren't that many guys at the top 1%. Oh, yeah. Oh, the applications, the ads they're putting out for the IRS agents is they need to carry weapons. They're going after everybody in the middle class. That's what they're doing. But it started out tip of the spear pointed at, well, we're going to go after tax cheats, you know, that make over $400,000 when they're gearing up to go after everybody else. This thing that they did in Parliament against Graham Phillips is geared at everybody else. Once that precedent's set, baby, it's set. And that's why you should stand against it. In Australia, in Britain, Canada, everywhere. Now, this CBC, what they did with Eva Bartlett is just as wrong. And here's why. Eva does fair reporting. Just because you don't like the reporting she's doing when they're uncovering it, when she's uncovering evidence, when she's showing blatant facts, it really doesn't matter. One of the definitions of journalism is publishing things that the people you're publishing, you know, you're investigating, don't want seen. That's investigative journalism. What she's doing on the front lines is just that. And it is, it embarrasses the UK because they're in the US because of their involvement, not fighting terrorism. It's kind of a schizophrenic relationship. They fight terrorism on one hand, and they're training terrorists on the other. So you've got this really schizoid relationship there. This is something that in our societies, it needs to be fixed. Now, the CBC doing that, saying that, you know, in Ukraine, Eva's saying there's Nazis there, there are nationalists there, and the CBC's narrative is saying that, no, there are no nationalists there, they're good people, they're Democrats, they're this, they're that. When 20 years ago, it was the CBC warning the world, stories out of the CBC warning the world against these people, this particular politic. The CBC was ranting that these people came out of World War II, they pushed themselves into positions of influence in government, and then they took over policy. That's what happened. And this is the result of that. What we're living with is the result of people not listening to the actual CBC warnings on all this way back in the day. Now, we have journalists today that are saying outright, you know, what they're not saying the CBC said it, but they're saying this is what's happening. So if these official broadcast companies were leading the way, spearheading the warning going out that long ago, and now we find ourselves in a position where, well, we find out the fruits of not listening back then. And quite frankly, back in the day, it led to what's called, I believe it's called the Duchesne Report. The Duchesne Report didn't go far enough. And because of the protests against it by the very community the CBC was warning against, they interfered with the report. Nothing was done. Canada, the CBC was reporting that Canada was chock full of World War II nationalists that were not just unrepentant. They were weaseling their way into positions of influence in the government and changing policy to suit them. And that's what happened. Today, the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of these people that did those horrible things control Canada's foreign policy. They're controlling U.S. foreign policy regarding Russia, Ukraine, China, South American countries, Central American countries, and the Middle East. The U.S. right now is supporting their friendly groups of ISIS, but they're still ISIS, I guess, if you can call them friendly, right? I mean, you know, hey, what's a couple of heads between friends, right? because of the lobby money that congressmen are getting from these people. And that's a stark political reality today. And it sounds, it would be wonderful, if this was tinfoil hat stuff, but it's not. Very, very documented. Very, very documented. So where do we go from here? Whatever country you're in, where do we go from here? Now, what happens when we don't? We're going to go back to Ukraine and look what this, how this looks internally. They just passed a law, or they're in the process of passing it right now, that these areas where the conflict is flowing into and Ukraine is getting pushed back from, if the people in those areas, now we're talking all the residents of a particular area, we're not talking 5 or 10,000 people or 50,000 people or 100,000 people, we're talking in a lot of cases millions of people, don't drop what they're doing and just leave, they're going to be persona non grata in Ukraine, subject to arrest or punitive punishment. Take your pick. Ukraine's big on punitive punishments. Their expectation for these people is that they literally, you know, if you have a home, leave everything there and get refugee status and leave. Outside the cities and even in the cities of Ukraine, people have small livestock. Believe it or not, even in the cities, they have some chickens, okay, the houses, you know, on city plots. When you move outside the cities, people have full-blown farms. That's the way it works there. That's how they survive. So they're telling people, you need to get rid of all your livestock, your pets, leave the lifetime of possessions that you worked so hard to build, all the memories, your jobs, your job security, everything. Drop it and leave. And they don't actually have a place for them to go yet. They don't have a place for them to go at all. And that was the case. They showed that early on when they were in the beginning and at a couple different points during the war in Donbass over the last 8 years. Ukraine's idea of evacuations was to throw people in summer camps and leave them there all winter with no heat. What are you going to do? Now, that was just hundreds of people. What would you do with millions of people? As a country, Ukraine has no economy left. They crashed it. They simply crashed it. And Zelensky's government just crashed another part of it. The Druzhba pipeline, which supplied gas to Central Europe, Romania, Czech Republic, Slovenia, instead of just accepting money for it, Russia was paying them, you know, for transit rights. They refused to get paid because they want money from the West instead. Because of the sanctions, Russia had to pay in rubles, and that wasn't acceptable to Ukraine. So Ukraine would rather take money from Australia, from Canada, from the US, from the UK, instead of a couple billion dollars for, you know, what it was worth for the pipelines. Yeah, you heard that right. Ukraine would rather be on welfare, taking in money from other countries, than just accepting payment for doing nothing. Because, well, it's Russia. So they shut down the line. Well, you know, that shows, well, they're not very fiscally sound people, right? But here's the other problem with it. All those little countries don't have gas coming anymore through that pipeline. And we're heading into winter. What do you think that's going to do? Doesn't bode well. Is Ukraine a good friend? Would you want Ukraine as your friend if you were one of these countries? And some of them have been staunch supporters of Ukraine the entire time. We'll talk about more of this right after the break. This is TNT Talk Radio, and I'll see you in a few minutes.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Where we are in the state of Queensland in Australia, we've had a lot of news coming through about how wonderful the transparency is, how wonderful the integrity is of our own local government or state government, led by a woman by the name of Anastasia Palachuk. In our local newspaper, and I suspect that this happens in other parts of the world, there has been an inquiry by that body known as the Crime and Corruption Commission into the spending of money. It was originally an inquiry into misuse of funds, so I gather.
So what have we done? We've hidden it, haven't we?
As a matter of fact, the first court allowed that report to be published, which would have shown us what the allegations were. Now the Court of Appeal has said they don't have to. We're not told what the results of those inquiries are, and we're none the wiser. All we do know is that there are large amounts of money being spent at public expense on secret inquiries.
Nefarious activities, perhaps.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left we're trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem, except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden. Then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at salemnow.com.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio. And this is something that's really heartfelt at the station because they want to bring the best programming always. Now, let's get back to the situation Ukrainian people are facing. Can you imagine if your government said, you need to leave or we're going to arrest you? And you have to sign a waiver before you leave, before we leave, if you're going to stay. And when we come back, guess what? We're definitely going to arrest you and we're going to take all your things. So you either lose everything because there's not going to be anything waiting for you. Your entire life, everything you've built, gone. You have a business? Gone. Everything's gone. You have to drop it and go. And it isn't because you're being attacked by anybody. It isn't because you support Russia or, you know, you support Ukraine or you support anybody. You've built a life, which is, you know, it's actually the biggest reason why people live in war zones to begin with. Everything they have is right there and they don't know what to do. They have livestock and you just can't, you know, if you have 5 or 10 cows or whatever, what are you going to do? Just open the gate and let them run away? Do they expect them to do what? Slaughter them and let it do what? Bury them? If they're saying everybody has to leave, you certainly can't sell them. What about your possessions? Now you have a mass order to leave, you know, and I don't care how democratic or how refined a society is, you're always going to have criminals. So imagine an entire region of empty houses. Do you think that'll attract criminal element? The Ukrainian army has a history of going into people's houses and just stealing things. What do you think is going to happen? Now, put this on top of last weekend, the mayor of, oh gosh, I forget what city it is now. I believe it was Kherson. Ordered all the residents to stay inside because the Ukrainian army was going to cleanse the city. They're going to look at every cell phone, and if you were not supporting Zelensky, they were going to cleanse you. Now, I've seen videos of people getting beat up. I don't know anything beyond that for sure right now. But according to the mayor, they were going to at least arrest people. The videos show them beating people up on the streets. This is what's going on. Does it sound like a very friendly government in any way, any shape, any form? Can you see how this relates to Graham Phillips' situation or when the government can call it, you know, one of its own people, brand it as working for a foreign government when they're not? Now, I know Eva Bartlett pretty well, and in terms of money, she's not getting paid by anybody except people that follow her, that are supporting her work. That's a fact. And the work she's doing, and the same goes for Vanessa Bealey, the work they're doing is funding the work they're doing. And they're, quite frankly, never going to be rich from it. And, you know, if you were here for the discussion yesterday with Nat Perry, one of the reasons I wanted to have that talk with him, to open up what it's like for even a big name like Robert Perry, you know, investigative journalism, you don't see many giants like that. And yet, after he broke his biggest story, that's when the struggles began. That's when he was considered washed up. That's when he was blackballed. And for really good journalists, it's just par for the course these days. Stations like TNT, it's the same thing. And they're treated the same way. And it's really an act of courage, Mike Ryan showing with TND, because he's giving journalists like this a platform to show what it is they're doing, and that a lot of other most other websites and platforms won't do. And the fact that all the work can be vindicated with evidence, you know, that's the scary part. If you listen to that conversation yesterday, imagine having 24 sources for one story. Now, those sources are bringing evidence on a lot of different points. So you need two sources to establish a fact. You need two facts to establish the concept of evidence. But each source can establish a lot of different facts, be part of that equation for a number of different facts and a lot of evidence. And yet he was sold down the tubes by his publisher. And that's the kind of courage that TNT has, that they bucked against that trend altogether. Journalists like Eva Bartlett, like Vanessa Beley, which is why, you know, I've got nothing but kudos for these people. When Vanessa Beley was on, I mean, can you imagine you're going into a situation, you report against Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda is giving you a tour of their facilities, and you're interviewing them, talking to them. How much courage does that take? This goes back to, you know, all these points are just related. These are the type of people that that parliament member is gearing the sanctions ultimately to entangle. And then it's you. And it'll always be you. Post something on Twitter after that. Once, post something there. After they start going after people for social media on this level, which won't be too far off if this isn't challenged, then we're all in for it. And then it's just a matter of, well, that's actually treating you like what I've just described is going on in Ukraine, isn't it? Only they've taken it a step further. It's a little bit more refined because they're going after you for thought. They're going after you for what you can see and touch and photograph and record. That's called evidence. Because not that it's inconvenient, but it's very, very damning to the policies that they're pushing. And the reason they're doing that is because their greatest constituents are making a ton of money and supporting them when they get elected. Supporting their vacations, giving gifts, and promises of employment afterwards. That's going on across the Western world right now, and it's a sickness for all of us. If we look at, flip over to the US right now, and what you see going on with the FBI investigation into Donald Trump, it's the same thing. It's just another manifestation of that. And, you know, if you're not a supporter of Donald Trump, well, you better pay attention anyway. Precedent is precedent. What they're accusing of now, if you look at some of the media, and, you know, it's quite frankly, it's frightening. Think about it. Donald Trump has a nuclear football. Have you ever seen a president of the United States walking around with something handcuffed, a little suitcase handcuffed to their wrist? You must have noticed Joe Biden's, right? He's always, you know, walking around trying to shake someone's hand. That thing must get awful heavy. president doesn't have the nuclear football. What they actually meant, and that was in Business Insider, by the way, what they actually meant was the codes for the football. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, they change the codes on a fairly regular basis anyway, but the codes are automatically changed when you have at the inauguration. So the codes, any codes that President Trump might have had, if they were valid on the morning of the inauguration, were no longer valid when right after Joe Biden was sworn in. So we have all these lies and this media hype being thrown up in the air. They're talking about all these secret documents and such. And I started looking into it and I found an interesting fact. Now, President Trump, in response to Hillary Clinton's email, signed a law that you couldn't take out secret documents or things that belong to the National Archive afterwards, and that it was a felony. Okay? They could mark it as a felony for documents marked secret. But what we're finding out now is that President Trump, when he did take things out of the office, the security area, actually authorized it by declassifying them. And he did it as a blanket thing. So what this is going to amount to are massive headlines over nothing. Now, are there secret documents out there? According to John Solomon, the FBI is scared to death because Crossfire Hurricane documents are in the bunch. They're in the mix. And they reveal a lot of evidence against the people involved in Crossfire Hurricane. So we're seeing that develop. If that's the case, if those documents are there, and we can paint it that way in real terms. And, you know, I'm being careful about it because, okay, those documents were there, but there was something else, okay, that there, you know, was a concern. Well, if that was a focus of this at all in any context, the FBI might be investigated for a cover-up of FBI misdoings. So that's something that we can look forward to after a Republican Congress takes over, and not before, because the Democrats will never allow that to happen. That is the crazy part of American politics today. Democrats have had a lock on everything so long that they are entirely against any type of power sharing in America. And all these shenanigans, every move that they're making is to solidify their power. Instead of actually doing what, providing legislation to help people, it's always been trying to protect their consolidation right now. It's bad for America, and the Democratic Party, honestly, they really need to start looking at their roots. And I'm not talking about the politicians, I'm talking about people. Democratic Party is needed for balance, just like the Republican Party in the United States. But when the parties lose their way, then what happens? This is what happens. And we're ending up in all these situations that we can't afford to be in because they're being stacked one on top of another right now. And something is going to get away. And what happens after that? We're going to take a quick break. I'm George Eliason, and I'll see you right afterwards.
The midterms, and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
While FBI jackbooted thugs marching through Mar-a-Lago sucked up all the oxygen yesterday, two big primary races were decided. Trump-endorsed former Green Beret Joe Kent got the nod to represent Republicans in November's general election in Washington State's 3rd Congressional District after incumbent never-Trumper Jamie Herrera Butler conceded. The district leans heavily Republican, so Joe has a great opportunity to return conservative representation to the people of Washington State. In yesterday's marquee matchup for the gubernatorial nomination in Wisconsin, Trump-endorsed businessman Tim Michaels defeated Mike Pence-endorsed Rebecca Clefish. In this proxy battle between the president and his former vice president, the vice president has yet to win a single race. Mike, maybe it's time to hang it up. Don't run in 2024. Let America first, take America back. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
There is a special place in South Dakota, a place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org today.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Natural disasters may seriously threaten civilization in future, yet the mainstream media peddles a pseudo-scientific man-made climate crisis. A major cosmic event would provide a real challenge for civilization. An asteroid strike may induce an ice age and major crop failures, and a solar coronal mass ejection that knocks out much of the world's electrical and communications systems would make today's problems look trivial. A solar coronal mass ejection hit Earth's magnetosphere in September 1859 and induced the largest geomagnetic storm on record. People in northeastern United States could read a newspaper by the light of the aurora borealis. Telegraph systems failed, and some telegraph operators received electric shocks. If such a solar storm happened today, power grids, GPS systems, telephones, and the internet could be disabled for an extended period.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Elias, and welcome back. Now, on August 12th, U.S. State Department said they won't recognize the entry of a number of regions of Ukraine into the Russian Federation if they decide to ascend into Russia. Ascension means they vote on a referendum to join the Russian Federation. Now, let me explain what's going on there from inside football. The Russian Federation demands that each region have a referendum and everybody have their say. So if let's say the referendum turns out that, well, this particular region does not want to join Russia, okay? They don't want to be a part of Ukraine because they no longer trust them. Or the third option is, well, they want to stay inside Ukraine. Russia will respect any of the three. Well, how do I know that? Back in 2014, we went through a referendum on these things, and Russia actually refused to allow LNR and DNR to ascend to the Russian Federation for a couple of reasons. They had the referendum on breaking away from Ukraine. They had to start new countries, okay? Russia wouldn't recognize until Ukraine was about to attack and destroy the people in the countries, by the way. But more importantly, legally, the laws of these two new republics had to come in line and mirror the laws of the Russian Federation. Do you have any idea how long that takes, how long a process? Now, they began it in 2014. In 2014. This is 2022. LNR is almost done. almost done. Now, LNR is going to have a referendum to ascend to the Russian Federation in September. And this is what these U.S. authorities at the State Department are barking against. Other regions are saying they want to join the Russian Federation, but they're going to have to go through this same laborious process of rewriting law. And it's not something, you can't take a book and say, change the title on it to, okay, this is Kherson, the Republic of Kherson, and, you know, we certify all these Russian laws. You can't do that. The legislatures actually have to sit down, discuss the laws, discuss the changes, put them into effect in these societies. It's a lot of labor, very labor intensive to do this. Well, the U.S. isn't going to recognize them, and they're going to sanction Russia even more, which I just can't figure out how they're going to go about that at this point. And they're saying they won't recognize any referendums as being fair. Okay. These people that voted their way out of Ukraine because Ukraine was attacking them have been working to align the laws with the Russian Federation for 8 years. All of a sudden, maybe they don't want to join the Russian Federation. Well, it's kind of possible, but unlikely as anything. I mean, wouldn't you agree? Now, there will be the referendum come September, and I'll be covering parts of it, when it happens. But these other regions are starting to vote with their feet, like I predicted. And, you know, it's going to be a sad note in history what Ukraine did to itself. You know, it's like having a mental patient that just sits there and, you know, cuts off their foot, then cuts off their hand, and then, you know, different parts of the body that way until there's nothing left or very little. Ukraine is doing this themselves, and it's not the war that's driving all these other regions to do this. I mean, you know, if you felt your country was being attacked, wouldn't you stand behind it? What, do you think these people are any different? So that's not the cause. It's because of how the Ukrainian government is treating them internally that you're not going to hear about outside of journalists that are there. Journalists that know what's going on inside Ukraine and not reporting the happy stuff like Zelensky sitting on a step in front of a bunch of sugar bags or shaking. What celebrity went into Ukraine today? CNN. Now give me a break. These people are being paid for all this. Sean Penn's documentary, financed by a Ukrainian oligarch. That's just how it goes. And the good news is it shows you where a guy like that actually stands on human rights. He's such a humanitarian, he'll sell out millions of people for a few bucks. And that's just the way it goes. And all these people, it's the same way. At this point, there is no excuse for not, if you're involving yourself in Ukraine, there is no excuse for not knowing the real story. Now, most people are not involved in Ukraine, so that story still needs to be told. That story still needs to be unwound, and especially how it's affecting leadership in countries' elections in all Western countries today. I've done a lot of groundwork on that, but it needs to be furthered a lot more, and I'm in the process of doing that. That part of it, what it shows is a very intrusive Ukraine. A Ukraine that, for the sake of their diaspora, is helping to change the fabrics of all of our societies through this 100+ million dollar a year information war. And you can't say it's not changing the fabric of society. Look what it's done. Look at the polarization. That's a direct fruit of it, and it's what they're striving for. The more polarized our societies are, the easier both sides are to control. And that's what's going on. They don't need to play both sides. They just need to be able to control one side as the opposition or enemy by making people make mistakes, like they're trying to do in America right now with the former Trump administration, with Republicans everywhere, with Democrats that don't agree with Joe Biden's agenda or the agenda of Nancy Pelosi, which is actually the more telling agenda right now. The thing about between Pelosi and Biden is, you know, she may not be much of a thinker, but Pelosi still has her wits about her. So she knows full well what she's doing. And she's enjoying the benefits of making a lot of money and investments through this. If you look at what happened in Taiwan, Taiwan is actually a big part of Ukraine, the whole Ukraine equation. Well, how can that be? If you go back to World War II, after World War II, the leader of Taiwan was Chiang Kai-shek. Now, what's interesting is his best friend was a little tiny guy about 5'2", whose name was Stepan Bandera. They formed the Anti-Bolsheviks League. Then they formed WACO, the World League Against, again, Bolsheviks or whatever. The Bandera led it right up until 1991 when Ukraine was free, and then their Taiwan people took over. They closed that down and became the policy writers for humanitarian, their report writers for humanitarian reports at the UN, that particular group. So they went from being World War II Nazis to writing humanitarian reports for the UN. But these two groups are still very much aligned. Now you see groups like Azov Battalion with the protesters. Well, that doesn't make sense, does it? Actually, it does. Taiwan, under its original government, was extremely nationalist. The protests overthrew that government, but they didn't know any other form of government except for nationalism. So they opted for a much softer version of it. These protests are actually geared to turn that clock backwards and make it a hard nationalism again. And what that's going to mean for Taiwan is that obviously rights of people will be curtailed, and they'll take the same path Ukraine's taking right now against, but they'll do it against China. And that's what Nancy Pelosi was in Taiwan for, trying to push that along a little bit. You see, it's not the Taiwanese government that she's friends with. It's the remnants of this World War II mentality. It's that party that Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden want in power. They want a conflict there. And it really doesn't matter that, you know, if you're on the island of Taiwan, you have nowhere else to go. I mean, you've got a, an ocean there. It really doesn't matter. They want the conflict. They want to light it up. They want to bring U.S. involvement. They want to bring all of the West involved in this. They don't care what Taiwan wants. So you've got what amounts to, for Taiwan, is the best government possible they can have. and Nancy Pelosi trying to destroy it. That's actually what was going on at that point. And you can look back at the history books, and you're going to see that Chiang Kai-shek was pushed out. And, well, where did he go? His peaceful transfer of power put him in retirement in Hawaii. That was the closest place he could find that was friendly. Yeah, he couldn't stay in Taiwan. Certainly wasn't going to China. Now, what I'm saying has nothing to do with the mainland Chinese government. I am talking specifically about Taiwan at this point. One thing that people are never taught in school is that all these hard nationalists are all underneath, they're socialists. These countries, these groups that want power, they have a form of socialism without Lenin and Marx. So that's all right, right? What it amounts to is they follow Mussolini's fascist ideas, which is also another socialism. Again, without Marx, without Lenin, without Stalin. Adolf Hitler's government was what that looked like. Stepan Bandera's former government and the outcome, it's actually starting to flourish, open up like a flower in Ukraine, is just that, what that looks like. And following Ukrainian events and why it's important is you're seeing these nationalisms starting to bloom. What do they look like? Well, in Ukraine's case, they certainly don't do anything for the people in the country. They don't. Ukraine was the richest country coming out of the Soviet Union. They had no debt. They had money power. They had some of the most educated research regions of the Soviet Union. Everything was all go. It was all set. All they had to do was govern. Everything was good to go. And this is what they did. They took it from having all the diamonds to having all the dust. That's Ukraine. The reason why is that, well, in the case of Ukrainian nationalism, they emphasized striving for so long, they forgot to write the story of what happens when we get what we want. Yeah, believe it or not, that's the case in Ukraine. After they cross the finish line, they have no idea what to do. Absolutely no idea what to do. So they turned it into a robber kingdom, which is what happened that started out in 91, and it's continued since then. Ukraine is the land of billionaires. All you have to do is be willing to put a gun to someone's head and pull a trigger. That's Ukrainian nationalist society, and that's where it sits today. Except millions of people don't agree with that. It's not their way of life here. It's not who they are. And quite frankly, they deserve better, I think. What do you think? And the bigger decision is going to be, as things progress from here out, do we deserve better? On the outside, in the US and Australia and Britain, Canada, do we deserve better? That's something to think about. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio, and I will see you Monday. Have a great weekend.